So we're going to reread Revelation 11:19, and that's just reminding us on what we're doing. And that's just simply, and the temple of God was opened in heaven, and there was seen in his temple the ark of his testament or covenant, and there were lightnings and voices and thunderings and an earthquake and great hail. And of course, we've been studying various symbols here. We've covered the ark of the covenant or ark of the testament. And we're talking a little bit more now about the temple, considering the verses in the Revelation that also talk about the temple. We did look at Revelation 3:12, a promise to the overcomers to be a pillar in the temple of my God, representing, as we know, that the 144,000 will have a role in being a support, a foundational support for the work of the what the temple symbolizes as a place of meeting between God and mankind, where we talked about that. We looked at Revelation 13:6, and that was referring to the papacy, opens a mouth in blasphemy against God to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle and them that dwell in heaven. We considered this, it doesn't say temple, it says tabernacle, demonstrating that God in his spirit begotten children dwells in the spirit begotten who are still in the flesh. And this is a reference how papacy spoke blasphemously about God's true children in whom he dwells his spirit. Tabernacle representing its the temporary condition of the church journeying toward the heavenly Canaan. We then talked about Revelation 14, and we looked at verses, I'm going to say we considered verses 14 through about 19, and that was a challenge. Because we jump right into the middle of it, and in this chapter, it's not just looking at a single verse like the previous ones I just mentioned, but rather it's a series of verses. So we discussed that. We came to understand that the angels here are representing messages, and they are different elements of messages, different parts of God's plan as they're unfolding, and different work was being accomplished, but just the thought, like in verse 15, let's say, chapter 14, verse 15, another angel came out of the temple, saying with a loud voice to him that sat on the cloud, and him that sat on the cloud is Jesus, so this angel can't be, there's no one superior to Jesus except God, the angel's not God, so it represents that it's part of God's plan, it's the message of God's plan moving forward in time and events. And the event here at the right time was for Jesus to begin the harvest work, starting with the wheat. And so we understood this was God's chronology mentioning or in, not mentioning, instructing that this is the time for this work to continue. So this message out of the temple, this is where we were saying that you see the temple does represent the church. Sometimes it does. You have to go by the context here. It's not the church giving instruction to a messenger to go tell Jesus what to do. That just would be inappropriate. But the temple can always, we can always have a sense that it's God-centered or God-orientated or referring to an aspect of either what God is doing, instructing. Some brethren have put it that the temple can represent the divine plan of God. Certainly it can represent God's authority. And as we mentioned, it does also represent the church or the Christ in a sense as a meeting place. So don't be overwhelmed. We're trying to write this all down like, okay, temple means this, 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 this. Just remember, it can mean a variety of things, but always goes back to representing God and his authority in some way as it's being expressed. Now, just in case that sounds strange, you and I are very familiar with talking about the Holy Spirit of God, the Spirit of God. And we talk about it doing a number of things. For example, in Genesis, it's the Spirit of God that moved upon the waters. So it was the power of God enacting the creative processes to prepare the earth for mankind to be able to dwell on it. Now, other times we talk about the Spirit of God as enlightening our minds. And another time we talk about the Spirit of God as our spirit begettal, representing our relationship to God. So the Spirit of God can represent various things, but it all goes back to being of God as a divine authority or source. And all that's what we're saying with the temple. We just have to look at the temple in the context of how it's used to try to best understand it. But it does, in one way or the other, go back to God as the divine authority. So there was that. Then we got ourselves here in where I had us left off is in Revelation 15. Now, it's true. We discussed these verses 5 through 8 last week. We're going to pick back up with that. And then we have a few more verses after that to go into. And perhaps we were talking so much about chapter 15. And again, we're not doing it justice because we haven't come to it yet. But nonetheless, for our study's sake, let's just start with chapter 15, and let's see here. Sister Gina, could you read verses 1 through 4, 1 through 5, and then Brother Mark, 6 through 8?
This is 15. Mm-hmm. Revelation, oops, I was in 16. And I saw another sign in heaven, great and marvelous, seven angels having seven plagues, which are the last, for in them is finished the wrath of God. And I saw, as it were, a sea of glass mingled with fire, and them that come off victorious from the beast and from his image and from the number of his name, standing by the sea of glass, having harps of God. And they sing the song of Moses, the servant of God, and the song of the Lamb, saying, great and marvelous are thy works, O Lord God, the Almighty. Righteous and true are thy ways, thou King of the ages. Who shall not fear, O Lord, and glorify thy name? For thou art holy, for all the nations shall come and worship before thee, for thy righteous acts have been made manifest.
After these things I looked, and the temple of the tabernacle of testimony in heaven was opened. And the seven angels who had the seven plagues came out of the temple clothed in linen, clean and bright, and girded around their chests with golden sashes. Then one of the four living creatures gave to the seven angels seven bowls full of the wrath of God who lives forever and ever. And the temple was filled with smoke from the glory of God and from his power, and no one was able to enter the temple until the seven plagues of the seven angels were finished.
So, very good. Now, let me just double back here. Okay, you clicked off your mic, and you read what I wanted you to. I asked you to. Thank you. But I'm going to read 16:1 then. And I heard a great voice out of the temple saying to the seven angels, go your ways and pour out the bowls of the wrath of God upon the earth. Verse 2, and the first went and poured out his bowl upon the earth. And it continues. I just should have included that verse in our reading just to round out this aspect. So there's a long-standing Bible student debate. Both sides have good reasoning along certain lines in their minds. The brethren that are, from Oakland County here are very familiar with the discussions that we've had over the years on whether or not the seven last plagues are a future pouring out of truths that lead to events that burn the bundled tares, which will then become part of the Lord's great army and tear down the nominal church systems, versus the view that these are, some would feel that the seven last plagues are the six volumes followed by something, a book that's the seventh, and that they've been started to be poured out after 1914 in each of the volumes. Then there is probably a prevailing view that's been developed, and that is that the seven last plagues are events in the world that take place, and they've started at various times. Some start them in 1878, some start them in 1914, and but there are various events, and they've been in process. And then there is the view that all seven have been poured out in the past, and that this is all over, and that the nominal churches have all been destroyed, and what you've seen in the churches are just social clubs. And so there's that view. In stating that, we're just going to proceed with what we have generally thought of and presented as that these seven last plagues are truths that will be poured out in the future, when the 144,000 are all complete and sealed, but with the few remaining feet members still in the flesh on the earth to do this work of expressing these truths. Sister Demi.
Just a question. Is it possible that these plagues could have a literal fulfillment as well as a spiritual fulfillment? Because I've noticed some prophecy, like in the Old Testament, has both a literal and a spiritual fulfillment. So I'm just wondering if that's possible. Over.
I don't see it that way, but that's okay. You know, there is the plague itself is a message. We're not told what the plagues are. We're told where the plagues are poured, symbolically, and we're told upon whom they're poured, symbolically, and we're told what the outcome or the result of that pouring is, symbolically. But we're not told what the plague is itself. However, we've offered interpretations of what those plagues are as truth by who they affect and the effect that they have, as if this is indicating what the plague was that was poured upon them. So, you know, if some feel that a plague could, one of the plagues as an event is the Great Depression. So either it's the Great Depression as an event already happened, or it's a truth in the future about a doctrinal truth. I don't see how you kind of make it both ways myself. So, but let each be convinced in their own mind. If you study this out and you feel you could come to that conclusion, that's all well and good. Sister Debbie, one more comment along this line, and then we're going to move forward with the temple study.
Yeah, just that after COVID, you know, everybody's thinking all these, you know, the flu epidemic of 1918 and so forth and so on. You begin to wonder. That's all. Over.
All right. Thank you. It's never a good idea to interpret scripture by current event, but rather interpret a current event by scripture. And think about that difference. You know, some here have interpreted when Saddam Hussein came into power, they looked for scriptures that somehow they can make him that. And they were teaching that for a while. Of course, Saddam Hussein came and went. And there was no WMDs. And so suddenly those verses that they were trying to apply him to, they got to look for a new fulfillment. However, if we're looking at the verses and we understand what the verses are, and then some event takes place that fits that verse the way we were looking for it, you can have a lot more confidence to have a proper interpretation. So, okay. We'll have to leave it there. So moving forward with that sense, the chapter 15, the first verse is telling us that there's another sign in heaven. There's another understanding of taking place amongst those who are either spiritually minded or in the nominal heavens, as it were. But what we're seeing is that it's a marvelous thing. That you have these seven messages or messengers having seven last plagues. So in my interpretation, just for what it's worth, is that we have messages that will be plaguing truths. And in them is filled up the wrath of God, because the weapon, the weapon of the Christ is the message of truth. And the message of truth is what will lead to the destruction of error and erroneous systems. Yes, there will be literal violence, but it won't be by the Christ. It'll be the result of their messages going out. Ruth.
I was just looking that we've already gone over the sixth stage of the church where there were plagues and they were truths. In Revelation 9. So it demonstrates that we've already gone over that, demonstrating that from the past, that that's what it was. So that builds up the whole concept that it's truth. Over.
Yes. Well, that's true. We've given discourses on this subject, going into verse by verse details. So if anyone's ever interested in that, we'd be happy to send the notes. We have it written out because it had to be translated. So we have that written out if anyone would like that, to go through all these various verses, helping to demonstrate, that this point. Okay. Thank you. Verse 2, saw it were a sea of glass mingled with fire, them that had gotten the victory over the beast and over his image and over the number of his name, standing on the sea of glass, having the harps of God. And they sing the song of Moses, the servant of God, the song of the Lamb, saying, great and marvelous are thy plans, Lord God Almighty. Just and true are thy ways, thou King of ages. Who shall not fear thee, O Lord, and glorify thy name? For thou only art holy, for all nations shall come and worship before thee, for thy righteous dealings are made manifest. So holding up there, and again, just because this isn't particularly a verse by verse study, but we did study the sea of glass because it appeared in the throne room scene of Revelation chapter 4, where we went into detail. We offer the suggestion there that the sea of glass is the word of God, which is water, which is truth. And clear as glass or crystal shows that the plan of God, when rightly understood, which is what the saints have in their understanding, they're supported by the word of God in its clarity. And it's mingled with fire, showing that the word of God also prophetically indicated that there would be judgments coming, fiery judgments. And those that have gotten the victory over the papacy and over the federated Protestants, not receiving their mark because they're supported by the word of God, understanding its clarity, the divine plan of the ages, they sing the song of Moses and the Lamb. They can bring a harmonious message or a harmonious description of what God's plan is, which reveals his wonderful character. And yet they also know it's the time of his judgments to come on the nominal church systems. So it will prepare the way that eventually all mankind will worship him when they see the beauty of his plan of the ages, from the Old Testament, the Moses, and from the New Testament, the Christ, the plan of salvation and redemption, the plan of ransom and restitution. It all flows together in this beautiful presentation that the 144,000 alone can have at the time. But then we get to this point, to where the judgments or the righteous dealings are emphasized. That's the end of verse 4. Gets us to that point. Then verse 5, that's where we left off. Now verse 5, and after that I looked, and behold, the temple of the tabernacle of the testimony in heaven was opened. So, brethren, there's more than one way to interpret these verses. It's true. We'll offer what appeals to our mind. To my mind, it's saying in verse 5 that once the 144,000 is complete, again with the feet members in, of the Christ sealed, but on the earth to be his spokesman, to deliver these plagues, these messages of truth. But the Lord knows that it's the time where the church is finally complete. So his temple, his understanding of the timing of his plan is now open so that the tabernacle of the testimony is opened, which you and I have studied that the tabernacle of the testimony has the thought of the law of God as being the foundation of the new covenant, which is going to be God's method of restoring his relationship to mankind through the Christ. It's going to be that great mediator of that new covenant using God's testimony, his law. It's now ready to be implemented, except one thing stands in the way. And the seven angels came out of the temple having the seven plagues, clothed in pure and white linen, and having their breasts girded with golden girdles. We suggest here that these are seven messages. They come forth out of God's plan. That next step is to pour out these seven last plaguing truths. These pure truths are righteous. They are their servants. And they have these golden girdles. They have divine authority as the servants of God to do the work of bringing down error, removing error, exposing error, which will lead to the destruction of these nominal systems. One of the four living creatures gave unto the seven angels these seven golden bowls full of the wrath of God who liveth forever and ever. We think it's God's attribute of justice that is giving forth these seven plaguing truths and empowering them by giving them bowls by which they can be poured out. Brother Gene used to say, this is God's going to provide the delivery system of how these plagues will be poured out. Now, let me talk about that for a second, but I've got two hands, so I won't complete that thought. But I'll come back to the delivery system. I'm going to make a note. Sister Debbie and then Ruth.
Are you relating that verse 5 to verse 19 in the sense of that the truths coming out or the vials are related to the lightnings and voices and thunderings? Over.
I've not developed that point yet, but thank you. That will come up. Ruth?
Just goes along with our study from last week in Revelation 14 that the angels there were messages. So it just like sets the precedent that our next mention of angels are also messages. Over.
Yes, exactly. And that's one thing we talked about last week is when we read the word angel, it can mean a literal angel, spirit being. It can mean a messenger. Angelos can mean messenger or message. So the point is that sometimes it can be an angelic messenger, it could be a human messenger, and sometimes it's the message itself. So in 14th chapter last week, we were interpreting it as a message or instructions given. And here, we're just doing the same. We're saying that these seven messages have the ability to plague or destroy error and all the erroneous systems, and that this is the wrath of God being fulfilled. And it's at a time when the seven truth messages or plagues are going to be able to accomplish what they only did in part throughout the gospel age. So let's talk about that for a second. So we know that we have to the seven stages of the church, we had literal messengers, seven angels, the seven church, literal messengers, we named them, but Jesus gave each one a message to be delivered to the church living at that time. So there we had a literal messenger, but they were given messages. That's true. The messages were all spelled out symbolically. Then we went to the, as it were, we covered the seven trumpets. And we identified the angel trumpeters as being the same as the angel messengers to the church. But those seven trumpeters, they gave a trumpet blast, and we interpret those, they were truths. And those truths, went forth, and they caused problems to the nominal church. But only so much. The nominal church was still ascending. But then we came to realize that we're told that the last three trumpets, trumpets 5, 6, and 7, are three woes. The last three trumpets were three woes. And we identified that as the Reformation, the pre-Reformation message of John Wycliffe. We found the sixth with Martin Luther as the Reformation message, and the seventh as the come out of her message of Brother Russell, so that these three had a more direct negative impact on the nominal systems, but they were messages of truth, brethren. Messages of truth. Those were those trumpets. So here, what we see is these messages of truth, the seven, showing divine, showing complete, that they now are going to be empowered to complete the work that they had only been able to do in a limited sense prior in the gospel age. So that they are all being depicted here as being the complete the complete messages of truth that the Lord will use, expressed by his final feet members, that will lead to the tear class, the nominal Christians, to realize that they really weren't true Christians. This is the burning of the bundled tares, and they will react by tearing down the system. We have that depiction in the French Revolution, where the people reacted to a floodwaters of truth about the rights of men, and then they tore down the church for a while, tore down the government with the church for a while. So this isn't a foreign concept in the Revelation. It actually has already been brought to our attention. But here the emphasis is that this is finally, after almost 2,000 years of the gospel age, of the Lord putting up with the beast and the false prophet, putting up with papacy and federated Protestant lies and distortions of his beautiful character and that of his son Jesus and that of the true church who they persecuted. Finally, his judgments are going to be sent forth. He's going to empower them by setting a stage in which these messages can go forth. And you and I, if we're in any of the final feet members, if we're so fortunate, we don't have to determine how to set that stage. We don't have to determine the delivery system. We just have to be faithful to the opportunities when they come to us. First one, we have to not receive the mark of the beast when it's forced upon all, great and small. We have to resist that mark because that's how we get the victory over it. over the false systems. So we have to be studied, awake, spiritually energized, so that we can recognize when that mark is being enforced upon all small and great, and we resist persecution as a result. But with that, just like Jesus, his greatest testimonies at times was when he was on trial, before the Sanhedrin, before Pilate. He gave forth his messages. Quite often, some of the greatest messages we got from the Apostle Paul was when he was on trial or when he was being examined at different times. Stephen gave forth his greatest message when he was on trial, as it were, an impromptu, ad hoc trial, which it cost him his life. They stoned him. But he gave a final message. So it's not without scriptural precedent that we see that it's by giving forth a message of truth that great things have happened, even though the ones giving forth those truths are persecuted, and even persecuted unto death. So with that just being said at that point, just looking a little further on to verse 8, 15:8, and the temple was filled with smoke from the glory of God and from his power. No man was able to enter into the temple till the seven plagues of the seven angels were fulfilled. So we all remember in our studies that when the tabernacle was completely erected, a smoke from the glory of God filled the tabernacle so the priests couldn't enter and do their work. When Solomon's temple was completed, a smoke like a glory of God filled that temple so the priests couldn't go in and do their work. When Ezekiel's temple is completed, there is a glory of God that enters into that temple as well. And that's, we have that depicted both in the Ezekiel 10 and then later in the Ezekiel temple chapters at the close of the book. But it's once again recognizing that the temple in some sense is God's plan or purposes or arrangement whereby he wants to be reconciled to his creation, his creatures, mankind. But the process is through a new covenant arrangement. God has meaningful relations with those whom he makes a covenant with. And when God makes a covenant, he has certain instructions by which the people should live in harmony with him in order for there to be a meaningful relationship. So here, the new covenant, the testimony of God's law that the Christ will be teaching mankind cannot go into effect to help mankind until first the errors of falsehood are removed and destroyed. When the systems that have taught and promoted falsehood are removed and destroyed. When the old heavens, the old religious systems, and the old earth, the old corrupted social structure are removed, then you can have a new heavens, a new religious structure, pure truth, the Christ in glory, and the truth about God, and a new earth, a new society under the great mediator, the Christ empowered to bring blessings to mankind. So until that time of the new heavens and new earth could be fully set up, this temple is filled with smoke, not allowing for the work of mediation to begin between God and man until the plagues have humbled men sufficiently, until the plaguing truths have removed the errors and the erroneous systems. Then after that, then will the mediation process be able to move forward. Sister Debbie.
Another question. In 11:19, it says that they could look into the temple. Of course, they couldn't enter it, but they could look in and see, I guess, the church being completed or the church was complete. And how does it relate to this one with the smoke in there? Is this later on where, you know, they you know, at first they could see the church, or do they see the church after the smoke is cleared over?
I mean, it's a good question we're going to go back to, and that, you know, different minds think along different lines. I'm trying to build a case by including all the Revelation scriptures about the temple and the tabernacle before we just go back and say, rock solid, this is it. So we're going to continue building the case, even though it's a good question, Sister Debbie, and we will come back to that. That was our starting point, and we're doing the circle tour in Revelation of these temple and tabernacle verses to hopefully see how we can find a way to harmonize all of them, at least in the first initial blush. But so have patience there. Now, though, I brought us to this point, 16:1, Revelation 16:1. I heard a great voice out of the temple saying to the seven angels, go your ways, pour out the bowls of the wrath of God upon the earth. So just back to this point about God's divine authority is expressed giving the saying, now's the time. I have set the stage. I have created an environment. I've created the psychological moment in the earth where these plaguing truths being expressed will have the attended effect. Part of setting the stage is the Lord allows the church-state system to become empowered, allows a church-state system to try to mark the people. And then try the church state system persecuting those who won't receive the mark. So that hour of power of the church state system, when they have that authority like they did in days of old for a brief 1 hour period, that's the time when the Lord wants this message poured out. And it will cost the final feet members their lives, no doubt. But their message will result in the chain reaction of exposing the errors, dispelling the darkness of the errors, their testimony of their lives like a Stephen, or certainly like the Master, or like other faithful before, they will enhance the message that they give forth for the intended effect. So I know that's a lot. That's a mini discourse, but we're opening, glad to open it for comments and different opinions to this point so far on this stuff, the temple being opened here and the tabernacle, the testimony open again. The plan of God has moved forward. It will be the time for, the new covenant to go into effect with its law. The great mediator will be ready. However, the seven last plagues have yet to be poured and complete their work so that then this temple can be open for business to restore mankind. But any other comment, any comments or questions on these verses in here? And again, like we say, it's exposure in Revelation. And we're going to come to the 15th chapter and go verse by verse one day, Lord willing. But at least we're trying to familiarize ourselves with it, if nothing more. So you don't have to feel like, oh yes, this is it, and I'm going to lock into that. It could be food for thought. Okay. So we'll just keep moving forward then in Revelation. Okay, Brother Roland.
Thank you, Brother Rick. If you mentioned on this subject, I just wanted maybe also short or depends, you will decide. How will this harmonize with, one moment, 16:19, when it says, after the seven bowl, only then great Babylon came in remembrance to give to her the cup of wine, which seems to imply that until now, within those seven bowls, Great Babylon didn't came before God to receive his wrath or something like that. How you will touch on this? Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Brother Roland. That's a good question. I can understand it by the phrasing here. But this is in the seventh plague. Revelation 16:19 is in the seventh plague. And what it's what we have to do to try to explain that a little bit is, you have to bear with me again. Sorry. On one hand, I'm going to move so fast, it won't be satisfying to some. Others are familiar with this and it'll just be, you know, a refresher, but we'll just try to do our best. So in 16:1, okay, I'm looking at the time. It's 20 minutes. I'm going to do this in 5 minutes or less. In 16:1, the divine authority goes forth, that the message of truths will, that contain the wrath of God will now be poured out. And because the 144,001 are complete, but the feet members are in the flesh to do their expressing of these truths. So these plagues are poured out. Each truth is given and it affects a different aspect of the nominal church society. Sometimes it's the theologians and the priests and the cardinals, the ministers. Other times it's the people, the laity. And so that it moves through so that in the pouring out of plague after plague after plague, Brother Russell suggests it happens in 1 year. He suggests in 1 day, well, 1 year, based on Revelation 18. That these truths are going forth and they're being presented in a very quick way. And they're having their effects. And by the time you get down to verse 12, the sixth angel pours out his bowl on the great river Euphrates. And the water there was dried up that the way the kings of the east might be prepared. And saw these three unclean frogs coming out of the mouth of the dragon, the beast, and the false prophet. So it's demonstrating that by these messages we're seeing that the church and state has become empowered, they're empowered, and that they are in harmony with the papacy, the civil government, and federated Protestants. And it's through their false expressions that they miraculously gather things together to such a point that it leads in verse 14 to the Armageddon battle of the great day of the Lord God Almighty. And in verse 16, it further demonstrates that they're gathered to this great final battle, as it were. And in 17, the seventh poured out his bowl upon the air, and there came a great voice out of the temple. This is one of our verses we were going to cover, saying, "It is done." And so it's brought out that seems to represent like the head of the body, Jesus, when he hung on the cross and when he died, just before he died, he said, it is done. It is finished. He had finished his work, finished his testimony. So here are the feet members in a like manner. It is finished. It's done. So that once more their message has been given forth. Their life as a witness has been demonstrated. And the plan of God itself, as it were, like this temple, it's saying now comes the final Armageddon crash. All these expressions of truth have revealed the error in such a way that now we're ready for the final destruction to be complete. And so verse 18, which is not the thing we were going to touch on, there were voices, thunders, lightnings, a great earthquake, such as was not since men were upon the earth, so mighty an earthquake and so great. This is again, we're going to talk more on this, but here again, these truths that have been expressed in this way in which is forced upon the nominal systems to hear them leads to these controversies, these enlightenments of truth that are frightening to man because it exposes the errors that they had believed in, and it causes this social earthquake as a tearing down of the nominal systems. And it's the worst revolution that had ever been. The French Revolution was explained as 1/10 of the city. Well, this is the other 9/10 of the city. So it's so much greater of an earthquake, a social revolution. And so in verse 19, the great city was divided because of this earthquake. So it's not that the plagues are just then poured out. It's the culmination of the plagues being poured out that it's demonstrating that this church-state system, this arrangement of the dragon, beast, and false prophet, the civil governments, the papacy, and Protestantism fall apart because the bundled tares are burned. They recognize they really weren't Christians, and they tear down these systems, just like in the French Revolution. And so finally get down to verse 21, there fell upon men a great hail out of heaven, every stone about the weight of a talent, and men blasphemed God because of the plague of the hail. And the plague thereof was exceeding great. So men condemned the counterfeit God that the nominal churches had presented. And they rejected all those nominal teachings of their counterfeit God, their counterfeit gospel, their counterfeit interpretation of the Old Testament. So that finally mankind, by these hard hail-like truths, hard water, finally get into a condition and the nominal systems are all wiped clean so that old heavens and old earth are removing away. They're getting close to the work of the temple class and arrangement to begin. So, okay, I went 1 minute over. So, let me open it up for your comments or questions. Ruth?
I was just looking at that verse 20 after the final city unraveled into the three parts. And it said every island fled away and the mountains were not found. So in other words, they weren't replaced by a new form of government. They just were gone. The small governments and the large governments and the kingdoms and the earthly powers, they were gone now. And they weren't replaced by something that came up to replace it. Over.
Okay, very good. So true. Very important point. So what happens when there's no government? See, a revolution has a revolutionary government to replace a government they removed. But when you have no government, what do we have? Right? Fire of anarchy. No government, it's fire of anarchy, every man's hand against his brother. And that's this horrible condition that the great company will have to pass through in order to make their robes white in the blood of the Lamb and find their position. That's that great tribulation, that winter of trouble. Brother Michael, please.
I was just wondering, is there a correlation between, and it's interesting that Sister Ruth brought out verse 20, because I was looking at it as well, the disappearance of the island. Is there a correlation between this and what we have in the Daniel study, where we have that stone, you know, level the image?
Well, there is a correlation. The Daniel study showing the Gentile times period ending by the introduction of the true church, the stone, but the true church is only in part at that time. But Christ does exercise his authority to end the Gentile times. World War I breaks out, and that leads to Israel being freed from the Gentile oppressors. But it's a gradual crushing and grinding of that image which we think culminates here, where it's finally completely gone, and it prepares the way for the fifth universal empire in its fullness. Other comments? Brother Mark.
Okay, so getting back to when you first started out today, the summaries of possibilities of interpreting these verses, there's no way that this stuff is done with. These verses refer to things of the past, and we're just like waiting for, I'm not sure waiting for what then, but, and I just want to make sure that I'm understanding what you went through today, just real quickly, like real high level. This is, has some of these events have certainly have happened, with the seven messengers relating to the seven bowls and plagues, but certainly some of this stuff has not happened yet and culminated. And I mean, we're waiting for still a great time of trouble and things like that. Is that a, am I close to understanding?
Well, yes. And that's, I think the only refinement I would give is that these bowls haven't been provided yet for the truths, these final plaguing truths, to have this complete destructive message. But it's true, these messages of truth have been throughout the gospel age available. They were trumpeted. They were spoken by the messengers. And they've been presented on the printed page, and they have been testified to by the Lord's faithful men and women throughout this gospel age. But this is showing a culmination period. So our 15th chapter is basically telling us the church is now complete with the feet members in the flesh. That temple can now be open. The new covenant arrangement is ready to go forth because I've got my mediator ready, Jesus the head and the church's body, and I'm ready to start working with mankind. However, I got to get rid of the errors and the erroneous systems and prepare men's hearts for them to receive these truths and receive this new covenant arrangement. That's, so we agree. We think it's certainly the culmination is still future. And it's just waiting for the church to be complete. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. But Sister Debbie.
I'm wondering these, we don't know what the truths are, I'm assuming. It could be, the truth that Babylon has all these errors, or it could be the truth that is the truth of, you know, the doctrines of the truth. Or both, in a sense, that would take Babylon down, because it says that men were angry at God, and you said that that's the false God. That's what I'm assuming you said. Mm-hmm. The counterfeit God. And so that these truths could be a culmination of both their errors and the truth. Right? Over.
Okay, so thank you. In our discoursing and in our notes we've written out on in that discourse, we go through and we suggest very specific truths based on who receives it and how they react to it. So we give very specific truths, like the Trinity, no hellfire, the ransom for all, the restitution for all, no church laity. We go through all of those truths and we suggest interpretations. Now it's true. It is interpreted. So it's not something you could just say lock, you know, rock solid, but there are suggestions. Okay. I'll leave it at that. Hello, James, Sister Molly.
Good morning. This is Sister Molly. I just wanted to, in my mind,
make sure that I'm understanding properly, that the seven messengers, the seven churches, the seven trumpets, at this point, we've had those, and that the seven bowls with these plaguing truths is something separate from these other seven. I just want to make sure that at the end of the age, and so they're kind of separated, so they're not related to each other, even though the plaguing messages might be similar to what was experienced in the church messages to the church, the seven churches, but that these are the sevens are different. They don't combine. Am I thinking of that properly?
Absolutely correct.
Okay, thank you.
The relationship is that there are truths in each of those. There is truth that plays a role, but you are right. The seven last plagues, that's our phrase when you look at chapter 15, verse 1. Saw another sign in heaven, great and marvelous. Seven angels having the seven last plagues. So these messages of truth contain these plaguing elements to them. Now, you know, I'm going to say this sounds kind of funny, but undoubtedly we each have told the truth to somebody and they didn't like it. And they had kind of a bad reaction toward us. In a little way, you plagued them with that truth that you expressed. They didn't like it. It hurt them up here, in here. You pricked their conscience or you made them feel defensive. You're exposing their error. That was a little way that you plagued them. So the plaguing truth, they've been throughout the gospel. Jesus certainly gave plaguing truth, didn't he? So the point is that the truths are the same. However, they haven't brought down the systems. They haven't destroyed the terrors, the nominal Christians, their beliefs. So this is saying the time will come when actually God sets the arrangement. When the church is completed, saints and final members in the flesh, that now God's truths are going to vindicate him. But the way God gets vindicated is he destroys his enemies by bringing them into the light of present truth. He destroys the air so they can come unto him. You know that old saying, you know, what's the best way to get rid of your enemies? Make them your friends. And that's what God does. He makes these people who have been blinded by Satan and the churches, he destroys those errors so that they can now freely come unto him through the Christ, meet him in the temple arrangement, because now they finally got their eyes open. The blinders are off and they can see that they had been duped by the errors, erroneous systems, and now they're free to come toward him in the light. So, if you've ever told the truth to somebody who had a bad reaction at first, but then later they came around and thought, you know what? That sounds pretty good. Let's talk more on that. You did in a little way what God's going to do in a big way. So, okay. Brother Roland, please.
Brother Rick, I'm glad you mentioned this expression, the last seven plagues. And I would want to know if this is last seven plagues. So they are the last seven from how many? And which are those, and when were those other ones, except last seven?
Well, so seven is a number showing perfection or completeness from God's point of view. So you could say on one hand that the harvest message is a complete message of truth, the divine plan of the ages and all the doctrines that it teaches. But in that, you can have specific plaguing truths that are more forceful and directed at destroying an error. Ruth had brought out in Revelation the ninth chapter, Revelation 9, verse 20. Revelation 9, verse 20. We are in the sixth trumpet, the era of the Reformation. And in verse 20, the rest of the men which were not killed by these plagues, yet repented not of the works of their hands, that they should worship demons and idols of gold and silver and brass and stone and of wood, which neither can see nor hear nor walk, neither repented they of their murders or their sorceries, nor of their fornication, nor of their thefts. Now, we did go through that in great detail. But the point is that the Reformation had plaguing truths. And it converted a lot of Roman Catholics to accept Protestant understanding of the Word of God, which was better. But many Roman Catholics who weren't killed, or that means converted to Protestantism, they remained in their errors, worshiping idols and false doctrines of papacy and so on and so forth. We went through all these symbols back then. The point is, is that plagues in the Revelation are truths. And these plagues or truths have been around throughout the gospel age. Jesus plagued the Pharisees with truths. They killed him for it. But they were truths nonetheless. So we've had these plaguing truths throughout the gospel age being trumpeted or set forth. But the point is that when God says the seven last plagues, it's not that they're different. It's that they're now going to have their divinely intended destruction of the heirs once and for all, along with their erroneous systems that promoted them. So that's why we would say they're the seven last plagues. They're not seven other plagues. They're seven last. This is saying this is it. I've got my church complete, God is saying. The temple can be opened. I can move forward. The Ark of the Covenant, this new covenant relationship can go forth. However, I got to get rid of the errors, and I've got to get men's hearts humbled. And we have to beat them down with a hail of truth, each one. Hard water truths so that they'll then be prepared to enter into a proper relationship with me based on truth and not on errors. Okay. Ruth, please.
Just a note that the candlestick in the tabernacle was made out of a talent of gold. Okay. So that's how heavy these hailstones will be. So that's how destructive they will be. Over.
Okay. All right. Very good. Appreciate that. Good reference. Brother Chris.
Yeah, I think you've expressed it a variety of ways, and it's all good. But I just to recap very quickly is that those seven messengers to the seven churches, the truth brought forth, it right from the very beginning, it was separating. It would take a little group and separate who accepted those truths and those that denied it. And then throughout each messenger that came along, the seal showed the timing of when they would be released. There would be a group that would take heart by it and be strengthened by it and separated by it, and the others would deny it. And then all the way through that. So same truth. Because where do we go to know what these truths are? We go to the scriptures where the Apostle Paul and John and even Luke expresses these things to us. That's why we know what those truths are. And then we finally get to where the Lord rewards those he has separated out and have been faithful and accepted all that, and he rewards them. Now we're looking at who's left. And this is where these same truths are going to judge them, and they're going to pay the price for all those opportunities to accept it. This is the retributive justice. This is the now it is undeniable. And this is what it's going to cost. So I just wanted to express it a different way. Over.
No, that's good. No, I'll appreciate it. Thank you, Brother Chris. It's all good. And if someone has a different view, that's okay. Again, this is exposure. To each one make it their own. I'm more convinced, maybe some of you are also more convinced than you're thinking because you've spent more time considering it. And that's what it's all about. That's what Bible study is all about. It does take time, does take effort. Okay. So Ruth, I see you posted. Thank you. Was that the notes on the discourse on the plague, the written notes?
That's what they are. Yeah. I hope it's the right one. I got it off the website that was posted.
Was there a date associated with it?
No.
Okay.
It was posted under handouts on harvesttruths.com.
Okay. Let me just do something here for a second. Bear with me. Brother Dan, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I think that's the appropriate set of notes. It's on the seven last plagues. So you go through and you name the possible seven last plagues or truths. And it gives also other important notes to understand, this final plaguing that will tear down the nominal systems and prepare for the setting up of the kingdom. Over.
Okay, let me see. Let me try this. I thank you for that. That what I just posted should be the. This was in February of 2022, so this should be my last notes that I gave on that. I can't tell you if that ends up being the same or not. I'm not that skilled, but nonetheless, there's another. And if that, hopefully, between the two. It comes through clear. And I'm happy to send it to individuals who email me. If you find it easier, I'm happy to just send me an email and I'll send it that way. So, okay. Ruth?
Can you post it again? I don't see it. Nothing.
Nothing came up. Okay, too bad. Oh, it went to Adi Direct because I had written Adi directly earlier. Let me try it. Let me send it to everybody. Oh, I'm glad you said something. Brother Adi's wondering, why did you just send that to me? Okay. There, right? Now you see it? Ruth, you see it now?
Yes, I do, yes.
Okay, good. Thank you. All right. Let's see here. Here is a little testimony, and because Sister Alice is with us in this study, I'm very happy to share it. I've said it in the past, long time probably ago, but well over 20 years ago, Sister Alice communicated to me about the seven last plagues because, Brother Gene had always thought that they were plaguing truths and yet to be poured, Brother Gene Burns. And Sister, Alice had worked closely with Brother Gene on that. We talked a lot up with Brother Gene on this. He was a great mentor, and great influence. And it doesn't mean we agree with everything. It's not meant to. But on this, the points were very well taken. However, he never spelled out the different individual truths. And Sister Alice wrote to me, long ago about it, and she offered some suggestions. So I considered those suggestions of what they might be and developed it more and more over the years to try to address all of the symbols in each of these verses in the 16th chapter. And that's what I find is perplexing on the different views regarding the plagues is if you don't try to address each of the symbols in the verses, to have a harmonious understanding of what this plague may be, then you're kind of only doing half your job, which means you're probably only halfly understanding it. So that was a great blessing. And Sister Alice, I thank you once again. You moved me to actually commit myself more perfectly to a greater definement of the symbols over the years. And I appreciate that. All right. So if there's nothing more on that angle, when we're here in the 16th chapter, verse 17, when the seventh message of truth was poured out on the air, which, well, just on this one, it's simple. We think that the air, it's the message of truth exposing that we wrestle not with flesh and blood, but with wicked spirits in exalted places, that the God of this world has been Satan, the present evil world, has been Satan, and his fallen angels have blinded the minds of people, and his ministers appear as ministers of righteousness, and he himself appears as an angel of light, as the Apostle Paul writes. But in fact, it was all their antichrist systems that they were presenting, which had kept the people from realizing the real truth of God's character. He's not a vengeful God of burning hellfire and this, that, or the other, but rather this God of love and righteousness, which those who are in the light of present truth are blessed to understand. But this will be the final truth, to say what's been behind the whole false church systems has really been Satan, and the Antichrist has been his masterpiece. And the temple, a great voice out of the temple, it is done. In other words, it's as if God's divine authority is saying, this was the final plague. This is the final piece. This is going to be the final truth, message of truth that's going to lead to the complete earthquake, the revolution against the nominal church systems. And that will dissolve into the fire of anarchy, and every man will be, their conscience will be tormented by recognizing that their false god was really errors, and the righteousness of truth, like that hard water, is going to break down their pride and their errors. But in verse 18, the voices, thunderings, lightnings, and then this great earthquake. And then we have the hail in 20. We set the stage here. We see what we've been communicating. And so now let's take that back to Revelation 11, 19, back to what Sister Debbie was first questioning about. Revelation 11:19, saw the temple of God was opened in heaven, and there was seen in his temple the Ark of the Covenant, and there were lightnings, voices, thunderings, an earthquake, and great hail. So now we can see that this timing is, it's synchronized. While we see that in the seventh trumpet period, these events will culminate, it's in Revelation 15 and 16 that we can see more clearly the sequence of events that finally brings us to that point when the nominal systems, Babylon the Great, is destroyed by the people rising against it. The people who rose against it were those tares that had been bundled in the different denominations. Now their errors are all burned. They no longer feel that they were really Christian, and they blaspheme their counterfeit God that the churches had presented. And it leads to these symbols. So I've been doing a lot of talking. It's true, more than usual. So I'll let someone else go through and reiterate these symbols that we have of the voices, lightnings, thunderings, earthquake, and hail, just to kind of round it out. Who would like to do that? You want me to keep talking? Oh, There we go. Sister Molly.
This is Brother James.
So,
but, yep, we're not giving you a lot of clues. So we have our notes from chapter 4, verse 5. So I'll just have what I have written down for lightnings, and that is truth that lights up the whole world, sudden and unexpected. That it's sometimes frightening and it's used as a conduit. So those are my notes from 4-5, and then applying it to this, Revelations 11-19, with the temple being opened, that we would have, let's see, put it together. These truths that light up the whole world, of course, that's the true message of, God's character and plan. So that would, certainly light up the whole world if the whole world was aware of these, of God's plan from the beginning, change a lot in how. If we think of the world now, how mankind has an understanding of reality and history and everything else, so it would be we could see how that would easily light up the world in their thinking. Over.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Appreciate that, Brother Chris, and then Ruth, and then we'll have to close.
Nothing different, from what Brother James just said, just to bring out a little bit of the Greek, the Ark of His Testament, and there were lightnings, and that's that Greek word astrape, bright shining. So these are illuminations, people are seeing things for the first time, discerning them, new, for them it's new truth, and voices. That is the Greek word phony, which we get the word phone from. But controversies, everybody's talking about what's going on and what they're learning and what's coming out and, arguing and whatever and thunderings. That's the Greek word bronte, but, these are great proclamations, and there are people saying, trying to deny it still, but it's, they're getting a lot of feedback, and an earthquake. And, that is the Greek word seismos, which is where they get the seismograph for earthquakes. And, of course, that is revolution. This is really changing social structure in a big way, and then the great hail, which is a real long Greek word. I'm not even going to try to pronounce it, but those are the hard truths that really this crushes all air, and everyone's resistance basically just hammers it all down. Over.
All right. Thank you, Brother Chris. Very good. Ruth?
I was thinking of, I guess it's more of a question, which is a bad way to leave the study, I know, but when the temple, the veil of the temple was rent, and you saw the ark when Jesus died, it was only those in the holy that would see it. So I was thinking that the church at this point, during this stage, would recognize what was really going on in regard to God's plan, and the rest of the world would see the lightnings, voices, thunderings, and the earthquake and the great hail, like in Revelation 16, but they're not necessarily recognizing the source yet. They're still just seeing the results, but those in the holy would recognize what was going on at this point. That's kind of a question, because instead of the whole world recognizing it because it was seen, but you'd have to be in the holy to see it. Anyway, over.
Yeah, it's the butterfly wing. It looks a little bit better from a distance than it does under a microscope. So the thought would just be that it's true. When Jesus died, when he said it is finished, the veil was torn from top to bottom in the literal temple. And it doesn't say they saw the ark, but that's assumed that the priests in there might have. They were in the holy. But nonetheless, it just demonstrated that God was no longer accepting the animal sacrifices. He tore that veil because Jesus was provided the ransom price there. He laid it down. But the thought just here that the temple is open is just like saying that the plan of God has moved forward in another development. And that development is that the church is complete and now the plagues have been completely poured. They just have to finish the work. The smoke has to clear. And that is, but as it's still smoky, you still have thunderings and lightnings. You have the intended effect of the culmination of these truths, which are controversy, thunderings, frightening. They're enlightenment, but they're startling. A lightning instead of a nice lamp, a steady flame, it's a flash of enlightenment. That's what this all does. And it leads to this great earthquake and brings the hail. Now, I'm just going to say this. I know we're out of time. Sorry, our Toronto brethren might be slowing you up here, but just in Revelation 4 verse, Revelation 4, 5, when we studied there, Brother James brought it out. It said that out of the throne proceeded lightnings, thunderings, and voices. There's no earthquake here. There's no hail here. It's just demonstrating that God, the throne, is the source of enlightening truths that are startling and controversial truths as thunders, and it creates the voices of many people talking about what is transpiring. But it's not an earthquake. He's showing that this is what will bring an earthquake. But this in that fourth chapter is just introducing us about God and his plan. But in the chapter 8, Revelation 8, 5, there the angel took the censer and filled it with fire of the altar, cast it into the earth. There were voices, thunderings, lightnings, and an earthquake. And that's telling us that this is precedent to the seven trumpets. And those messages of truth would be thunders and lightnings, controversies, startling enlightenments of mind, and yet it would lead to social revolution in the various forms, earthquakes. And it's in our Revelation 11:19 that we have the voices, the lightnings, the thunderings, the earthquake, and then additionally the great hail. And then in Revelation 16, where we're talking, we got the same symbols, but also the hail. So the hail isn't introduced until the time of the seventh plague doing its work. That's where finally the hard truths wipe away the refuge of lies completely. Okay, we'll leave it there for what it's worth. Lord willing, the one remaining verses that we didn't cover in chapter 21, actually, they're in a more positive sense of using the tabernacle and the temple, more positive than what we've already, been considering. It's still being used to lead to the overthrow of the present evil arrangements. But there it's as we would expect in chapter 21 with the holy city, except that something more positive. We'll touch on that just to round out that temple study next week, Lord willing.